Morning, ladies and gentlemen. We have six cases on our calendar this morning. An employee case and a veterans case, both of which are submitted on the briefs and will not be argued. And we have four patent cases, one from the PTO and three from the district court. First case is the PTO case, Rolf Dietrich versus Shimano and Capos, 2010-15-30. Mr. Perdue.
May it please the court, I am David Perdue. I represent Rolf Dietrich, the inventor and the appellant in this case, where the subject matter involves bicycle wheels. And more specifically, it involves the tension in the spokes of the bicycle wheels. And it involves a question, the issue of Mr. Dietrich's claim to the priority of his 544 patent for the claims in the 113 patent.
So your claim that you have in your patent is to a tension of 200 pounds. And you want the priority from prior patent that says 150.
It does say 150.
One might say there's tension between those two numbers.
One certainly could say that. And the other thing, another thing that is said in the 544 patent is that it's a tensioned spoke bicycle wheel, which is a clear disclosure that the spokes would have a tension greater than zero.
So is your position that that disclosure supports a claim specifying any particular tension? In other words, because suggestion that there has to be some tension that supports a claim to a specific tension.
To a specific minimum tension.
Any
that
minimum
is greater
tension.
than
any minimum tension greater than zero.
Any minimum tension that is 150 pounds, which is disclosed as a typical tension, would certainly be encompassed and supported by the 544 patent.
What about 100 pounds?
Certainly would, as a minimum tension. It's greater than zero, and that is specifically disclosed.
But the claim doesn't say greater than zero. The claim says 200, very specific.
Combined tension in two spokes, greater than 200, indeed. And during the patent reexamination proceeding, we learned more about typical spoke tensions in tension spoke bicycle wheels from the Japanese industrial standard, and that is found in the appendix, pages 92 through 97.
Does the specification mention the Japanese standard?
No, not at all. The Japanese standard applies to the specific kind of wheels that we're talking about. Round rim, central hub, connected by spokes. And it indicates that the tension must be higher than 67.4 pounds per spoke. And because we're talking about the combined tension in two spokes being greater than 200, we see that we're talking about something that is not only greater than zero so far as tension is concerned, but it must be greater than 67.4 pounds.
How does that get you to 200?
It gets to 200 because greater than 200 would encompass the 150 pounds per spoke typical tension. And so as you move up, I think it's well illustrated graphically in the reply brief on page 16. We have four graphs, four bar graphs, and there we show the minimum being greater than zero in the first bar graph. Second bar graph, we're looking at the combination of tension of 67.4 pounds And in the third bar graph, we're looking at the combined tension in two spokes where each spoke is 89.9 pounds or greater. And then at the in the bottom of the fourth bar charts is the claim tension, greater than 200 pounds for a pair of spokes. The in reference to claim 6 in the patent, we're reciting a tension greater than 150 pounds for a single spoke. And I think that there are some important similarities in the present case and the Wertheim case, where in Wertheim we were talking about a limitation of 25 to 60% solids, and there was a disclosure of 36% solids. In that case, the patentee was the inventor was entitled to claim from the disclosed 35% up to 60%. I submit that the inventor probably would have been successful had he sought to claim the range of 25 to 35%. And here we have the 150 pound per spoke limitation. The typical spoke tension of 150 pounds specifically disclosed. And as you can see in the bar graph on page 17 of the reply brief, that's graphically illustrated in the fourth bar graph. So from 150 pounds, Mr. Dietrich was entitled to go either way within the bounds of conventional knowledge about spoke tension. A great deal has been made in this case about the fact that the 150 pound spoke tension is disclosed relative to a conventional wheel that does not have paired spoking, while the claims of the patent are limited to a bicycle wheel having paired spokes. I have brought two examples of paired spoke wheels, and I would submit that the record does not support any distinction between the tension of spokes in conventional wheels and the tension of spokes in wheels that have paired spokes. I see that I have not used all of my 10 minutes, but unless there are questions.
We'll save it for you.
All right, sir.
For rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Tarnoff for Shimano.
Morning. May it please the court, my name is David Tarnoff and I represent Shimano, third-party requester. Basically, we feel that this is a case of written description. 150 pounds is mentioned only in the background, referring to some prior art wheel. As Mr. Dietrich as Mr. Perdue has said, Mr. Dietrich has invented a paired spoke wheel with a special crossover pattern. And also he's noted in his reply brief that 0.03 inch was a significant difference and they got a patent on that. Small differences in this art make a lot of difference and we get patents on those small differences.
You're saying 150 is only in the background.
That's correct.
Are you referring to the 544 patent?
I'm talking about the 544 patent and the 113 patent. Basically, the 113 patent...
Why aren't you focusing on the 200 limitation of the claim?
Well, I think I am, too. The thing is, the 150 is what is disclosed. There's no disclosure for 200. Also, there's no disclosure for 150 being the minimum. Again, that was typical 150. A little bit more, a little bit less. Not a specific minimum. This is a specific claim limitation to allow Mr. Dietrich to remove that limitation and say it's meaningless is just unfair to the public. And we don't believe that a single mention of 150 typical spoke tension for a unpaired spoke wheel that doesn't have the special crossover pattern is supported by the 544 patent. Moreover, he filed this case as a CIP. The 200-pound spoke tension minimum limit was mentioned in the abstract, the summary of the invention, and claim one, the only independent claim at the time of filing and at the time of issuance. Clearly, in the four corners of the patent, there was no 200 pounds in the 544. If he had support for it, he wouldn't have needed to add those limitations. He wouldn't have called it a CIP. You know, if it looks like a CIP, he adds all those things, it must be a CIP. I just don't see how he can now say, oh, after we've gone through this re-exam, we've now learned from the Japanese industrial standard that there's this new spoke minimum, that he suddenly has a minimum, and all he has to do is be better than that. Under his theory, he could add a range, well, it has to be more than 300 and less than 400. He can if we let him do this, he can arbitrarily pick any range he wants, because he's alleging he has a range from zero to the breaking point of the spoke. Well, the claim calls for a wheel that improves shimmying and wobbling relative to the prior art. Well, let me tell you, a spoke tension of less than what's allowed in the Japanese industrial standard is not going to do that. Certainly, he did not possess within that claim that his range extended all the way down to zero. I just don't see how we can allow him to claim priority for that single mention of 150, even in the claim 6, which was added during reexamination, which he says is a minimum spoke tension. Again, that 150 is just typical.
His view is that it encompasses, includes greater than 200, right?
Yes.
In other words, at least 150 includes possibility of greater than 200.
Yes, absolutely. And that's not supported by a single mention of a typical spoke tension, not a minimum, just 150. And that's a typical. He doesn't say it couldn't be more or less. He just says that's typical. And he's talking about the prior art. He's not talking about his invention in the 544 patent. When we get to the 113 patent, that's when he starts talking about this minimum tension of 200. And the public, the examiner, we all should be able to rely upon specific numerical limitations that are in a claim. You know, patents give us notice of what the invention is. It would be unfair to let him go back and rewrite history by saying 150 supports any minimum spoke tension because it's a spoke tension wheel. Well, the claims are not to just a spoke tension wheel. It's to a paired spoke wheel with a crossover pattern with improved wobbling and shimmying. And improved wobbling and shimmying certainly cannot be accomplished at a spoke tension that's not even allowed in the Japanese industrial standard, which was not of record during prosecution. It only came of record during the reexamination. If there's no other questions, I'd like to yield the rest of my time.
That's fine.
The solicitor.
Mr. Johnson for the Patent Office.
May it please the court. There's no evidence in the 544 patent that supports the in excess of 200 range that he has asserted in his 113. He tries to rely upon the typical language that's found in the 544 in order to support the in excess of 200. However, that typical language, as mentioned earlier, was only brought out in the background section and it relates to a single spoke. Dietrich did not provide any evidence showing that a typical tension actually was supported by the claimed invention. The examiner pointed out...
If we concluded that the 150 did have relevance here, is that sufficient to support a 200 limit?
The mere fact that it was relevant, Your Honor?
No, if let's say that a tension of 150, in excess of 150, were supported by the earlier disclosure. Does that mean that that supports a tension in excess of 200?
I wouldn't think so, Your Honor, because, again, the 150 is merely based upon a single spoke. There's
About that. Suppose the original specification had disclosed exactly the same kind of wheel, and it said 150. Okay, in excess of 150, it disclosed that. Mm-hmm. Would that then support 200?
So, if I'm understanding you correctly, the disclosure described 150 in excess of 150, and the claim called for in excess of 200.
Right.
I think that might be a closer case, Your Honor. However, as you know, that's not the facts that we are presenting with
here. Why would that be a closer case?
Only in the sense that the 150, the in excess of 150, is somehow tied into the 200. I'm not conceding that it would be. It is just based upon a different set of facts that might place him in a better position to argue. However, we don't have those particular set of facts here.
Is Judge Dyke's hypothetical closer to the In re Wertheim case?
In that particular case, Your Honor, there was a specific set of ranges where there was a low end, a specific low end, and a specific high end. We don't have that here. We have a low end that is being claimed, but we don't have a specific high end. So that case is completely distinguishable. We don't have an overlap as the court found in Wertheim.
Well, Mr. Perdue is arguing that the high end is when the tension is so great that the spoke breaks.
But there's no evidence, sure, Your Honor, that's what he's arguing. However, there's no evidence as to what that high end is. And that was part of the problem that the examiner pointed out. He's arguing that the disclosure calls for zero to some breaking point, but his claim says from 200, in excess of 200. We don't know what that breaking point is, so the 200 could actually be outside of that breaking point range, as the board found. So without the evidence that was requested, there's no way to say that the 544 patent actually supports the claimed range. And he had a number of opportunities to provide evidence. The examiner requested it. The board pointed it out to him, and the board was even perplexed by the fact that he was saying that the minimum tension was 269, and yet he wrote a claim that was outside of that 269 range. And what we have found here, Your Honor, is that at different times, the argument with respect to the minimum tension has changed. Before the board, the argument was that the minimum tension is 269. In his blue brief to this court, he said that the minimum tension was 64. And now, and then in his reply brief, he said that the minimum tension was something in excess of zero. All of those different changes shows that it's his position with respect to the minimum tension is nothing more than guesswork, as opposed to actual evidence.
Would the minimum tension of 269 meet the 200, greater than 200 limitation?
No, it would not, Your Honor, because the 269 is above the minimum 200. And as it turns out, he's actually, I believe, conceded that argument, and he's moved on to the in excess of zero as being the minimum tension. And it's also worth noting that he did file a CIP in this case, as opposed to a continuation or some other form of application. And when you look at the 544 and the 113 patent, you see that for the most part, they are identical, except with respect to the claimed ranges that are here and some discussion about the crossing of the spokes in the center plane.
You're saying he conceded.
That would be our argument, Your Honor. By him filing the CIP, he's actually conceded that the effective filing date for the 113 was the date in which the CIP was actually filed.
But I think you would agree that even if the application were designated as a CIP, if indeed there was support, that there would be a basis to argue that he's entitled to the priority date.
That's completely correct, Your Honor. However, here there's no evidence in the 544 to support the language in the claimed invention here. There are no further questions. Take my seat.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Perdue has some rebuttal time.
I regret that I have introduced into the record below some arguments that, in reflection, were not as good as they should have been.
Well, you thought that they were the best possible at the time.
Yes, I did, Your Honor. Looking back, we do have a minimum of greater than zero, absolutely, clearly disclosed in the 544 patent. During the reexamination proceeding, we got another look at another perspective on minimum spoke tension from the Japanese industrial standard. That standard is not limited on its face in any way to wheels with paired spokes or wheels with unpaired spokes, paired spokes versus conventional. Those minimum tensions are require tension in excess of the 67 pounds or the 89 pounds. We do have a clear disclosure in the 544 patent that 150 pounds is a typical spoke tension in a conventional wheel, and we have an absolutely clear disclosure in the 544 patent that Mr. Dietrich's wheels have conventional spokes. The unconventional part of his spokes is the way they're arranged. But the specification clearly says the spokes are conventional except for the pattern in which they're laced. So I submit that there is no basis to distinguish between the disclosures in the record about spoke tension for conventional wheels versus the tension in wheels with spokes that are not conventionally laced. I think it may have been a mistake to introduce the range of tensions because the claim recites that the tension must be in excess.
Well, we're not here to critique your past arguments.
No, sir.
The question is whether the current claim is supported by these vague references in the 544 patent.
Exactly. And we've addressed the issue on page 26 of our reply brief about the fact that 113 was filed as a continuation in part.
Wasn't that a concession of difference?
It was a concession that
words were added. New. It was something new.
Exactly. Words were new. New words were added.
New words or new amounts.
New specific tensions. Minimum tensions, yes, sir.
That suggests that the new tensions weren't in the old one or else needn't have been a CIP.
It does suggest that, Your Honor. And yet, when you look back at the teachings in the art, you see that the minimum tension had to be greater than zero, had to be greater than 67 pounds. And I would just, if I may, pick up a wheel and bring it back to the podium.
I think what counts is what's in the spec.
It absolutely does, but it has
rather
to be
than what you can show us.
It has to be analyzed in light of the prior art. So we're talking about tension. If you tension it to a higher tension, there's more tension. I think that there's an interesting thing going on in claims of the 113 patent that put an upper limit on the number of pairs of spokes, 9 pairs of spokes or less. The 544 patent and the 113 patent disclose a wheel with 9 pairs of spokes, and they disclose a wheel with 18 pairs of spokes. There is no specific disclosure of a wheel with less than 9 pairs of spokes. And yet, Mr. Dietrich was permitted, it was permissible for Mr. Dietrich to put 9 pairs of spokes into claim 1 as an upper limit on the number of pairs of spokes. If you take away spokes, you have fewer spokes. If you tighten the spokes, you have more tension. The focus of the invention here is specifically the lacing pattern without regard to tension. To have a specific minimum tension into the claim doesn't change the fact that the wheel has to have tensioned spokes.
Mr. Perdue, the other reason why we don't want you to argue, bring up this wheel now, is that this is now a rebuttal argument, and your opponent wouldn't have a chance to respond to that. So
that's certainly
anything
correct.
Further to say?
I do not have anything further.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Take the case under advisement.